Dude, it's been such a long day. I just don't want to.
Like, I fear the equipment is set up. Like, we need an episode. It's Sunday. It's time to film, like, intro.
I mean, if the people need it bad enough, I guess I'll do it.
Yes, like now. Like, okay. Now, preferably.
Oh, like right now?
Yeah, like, right. Like, the second.
Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. In today's episode, we're going to be breaking down volume 117, issue number 12 of the Daily Titan student newspaper. In today's episode, we're going to be going over a couple of stories, including a new Beyond the Conversation that recently happened, as well as a recent Academic Senate story. We're also going to be going over an opinion on the alt-right pipeline, as well as breaking down the recent softball standings in sports. Stay tuned for the episode, Titans. And by the way, I'm your news design editor, Kabir Kansara.
And I'm the opinion editor, Jaden Lovelady.
You know, we had a guest on campus recently.
For Beyond the Conversation?
Best believe.
Who?
Stephanie Beatriz. And you know who's here to tell us about it?
Oh, can I guess? I'm good at this game.
Yeah.
Is it Emily Wilson, the editor-in-chief of the Daily Titan?
You might just be onto something.
I'm so good. I'm undefeated.
Yes, I did cover Beyond the Conversation. My first Beyond the Conversation that I'm covering, my last Beyond the Conversation at Cal State Fullerton.
Wow.
Whoa. That's a lot. Yeah.
So Stephanie Beatriz, she visited last Thursday. She talked to students about the importance of like using their own voice, whether it's in the audition room or like once you're playing a character. She's most known for her roles as Detective Rosa Diaz in the sitcom Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and also Mirabelle in Disney's Encanto. And she talked a lot about how in both experiences, she brought aspects of herself to the characters she played. And she said that she thinks characters rooted in honesty, like similar to the real life people, helps the audience resonate with them more. So that was one of the big messages from her speech, was talking about the importance of, you know, speaking up. Because she said she had one line being like, no one knows you like you, or something like that. That didn't make the story.
Line. Yeah.
Or like, there's no one exactly like you. There's people a little bit like you, but no one exactly like you.
Yeah.
But yeah, she talked about, this is the third graph in the story. I thought this one was a banger. I told her, I got the chance to interview her after.
Oh, that's awesome.
I told her that this was a bar, and she didn't know what that meant. She was like jazz. And I was like, well, not exactly.
Like,
what
seriously?
Was, what
yes,
was the
like,
bar?
Yeah.
Awesome, actually.
The bar was, art is such a powerful way to get ideas in people's heads that perhaps they hadn't thought of before. It's an incredible way to make people feel empathetic towards people who are not like them at all.
Honestly, that is a bar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bar. Yeah.
Not like jazz.
It's really cool hearing her speak on the importance of how art can kind of translate to real life and the way they kind of mirror each other. Like, one of the graphs that really stuck out to me in the article was about her talking about her coming out as bisexual in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and how, like, that wasn't a conversation she had in real life with her parents. But it was one that she had in the show with her parents, and how they contacted her afterwards about that.
So how she told it, not exactly, but so she had come out as bisexual to her parents. It wasn't something they had talked about.
Yeah.
And this was season 5 when her character came out as bisexual. And Beatriz was talking about how she like planted the seeds for Rosa being queer. Like, she talked about how Chelsea Peretti played Gina, who was like another one of the, like an admin worker for the police department. And she told a story about how they were flirting so much during scenes, like in seasons 1 through 4, that the editors had to cut it out. And she was like, no, let him have it. Like, what if Rosa is queer? You know, she was kind of foreshadowing, but
that's really cool.
She also talked about how the, you know, just how that came to be. That was something she really advocated for.
Yeah.
She, the writers of the show interviewed her about her real life experiences. And Stephanie was talking about how there were specific things that she wanted in there, like what her family said to her. Like, her dad had told her bisexuals aren't real. And she wanted that in the show because, once again, you know, it goes back to the audience resonates with characters more that are rooted in honesty, and that was her truth. But she told her really, and she, low-key was emotional. She was tearing up. This was, and honestly, this was from an audience question too. So shout out to the musical theater major that asked that question, because it got like the most emotional response out of the evening. But she was talking about how, you know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, obviously a big hit. Her parents would call her after every episode. But the episode where Rosa came out, her parents didn't call her. And then she didn't really know what to say, so she didn't bring it up to them at all. Yeah. And then she said she was at some, like, Comic-Con a couple weeks later, and a fan had asked her, like, oh, how did your parents react to that? And she was like, honestly, I don't know. Like, they didn't reach out. And then she said her dad must have had, like, a Google alert for, like, her name or something, because he saw that she had said that on Comic-Con. And then he reached out to her. And he said something along the lines of, like, we love you anyway. You know, like, we love you no matter what. And that was something that Stephanie Beatriz, or Rosa's dad, said to her in the show.
Yeah.
And she was just talking about how, you know, kind of backtracking just her journey. She grew up with TV, but she didn't grow up with people who looked like her.
Yeah.
So she was talking about how, like, you know, she used the word miraculous it was that her dad, you know, got to relate to a TV show enough that he would use the lines from a TV show to tell his queer daughter that he loved her.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool how she talked earlier on in the conversation about how, like, art and life kind of go together. Like, you look at art that inspires your life and life that inspires your art.
Yeah.
And to see her kind of, like, encapsulate that with her talking about the way her dad responded to that.
Yeah, because...
And using lines from the art that she was a part of.
To advocate, like, for representation like that and, like, bridge the gap of, like, you know, reality TV and actual reality is, like, you know, it's cool. I liked how...
So, like, going back to the quote-unquote bar, she was saying, like, she got the idea into her dad's head that they hadn't thought of, he hadn't thought of before. You know, the idea of being cool with, like, bisexual people.
Yeah.
Shout out. Like, it was just something that, you know, it was cool that she had was able to give, like, such a good line like that, and then also, like, back it up with, like, experiences that she had.
Some anecdotal evidence.
Like, in the middle of the story, it was talking about how she explored underrepresented playwrights and writers when she was in school. I think that's so cool. Like, to hear someone who's, like, she's famous, don't get me wrong. She's an amazing celebrity, and she's obviously done amazing work.
Right, right.
But she's not, like, a household name or anything. So to have, like, a, I don't know, not B-list celebrity, but someone...
Yeah, lesser known, maybe.
Yeah, someone who's lesser known, like, talk about how she got inspiration from the even lesser known, like...
Yeah.
That's... I don't know. There's something cool about that. Because it's just, like, the idea that even though you weren't someone, like, completely notable, but your stuff still impacted an artist that did become notable.
Right.
Or, like, was noticed at all. It's just cool. And it's cool to see, like, artists, I don't know, appreciating artists who are past.
Yeah.
Even if they weren't, like, huge.
For sure. That was the quote that, like, the question I asked her. I kind of wanted to ask her because something to the effect of, like, she was able to advocate for herself, you know, when she was playing Mirabelle in season 5 of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but it's like, she's already kind of made it then, right? Like, it's a lot easier to talk about an arc you want to see a character go on when you're well-known, or, like, you've been known by the showrunners and the writers for 5 years. Right. I wanted to ask her, like, okay, as a college student, like, how can you, you know, you're doing source material that you may not even really know about, like, old stuff, like, how can you as a college student kind of apply those? Like, that's what I asked her, and that's what gave me the quote that she talked about. Like, she just did stuff that she found interesting and stuff that the underrepresented art, right?
Yeah.
The stuff that,
yeah.
Not that maybe her professors or whoever wanted her to do, but the stuff that she resonated with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. And I think it wouldn't be an insane claim to make that that made, like, an impression on her being, like, that person who, like, tries to, I don't know, represent, like, more things, more real life things in her, you know, fictional TV shows.
Yeah. And some of the things, it's funny, some of the things, like, you know, Rosa coming out was something that Stephanie advocated for, but then there's all the things like Mirabelle, like, swinging her arm and how that's making into, like, that's making it into the Disney parks, and that's something that she did, like, inadvertently when she was filming. And
that was really cute. And that was, like, my favorite part of the article. I was like, that's actually really human and really cute.
Yeah, you know, you see kids do that, and it's like, well, I actually interviewed the person who is the reason this kid's doing that. Like, she came to Kelsey Fullerton, we're up right now.
Up. Tusks up, aura up.
Yes.
If you could have anybody come to Cal State Fullerton for, like, aura purposes, who would it be?
I think that my dream beyond the conversation would be Rachel Zegler.
That is a good one.
I have loved everything. I've loved everything she's been in.
Have you seen Snow White?
I have. I thought she was good. Sue me. Hunger Games, I'm a really big fan of. She was phenomenal.
That was phenomenal. My favorite role of her.
To get West Side Story at 17... completely unknown. She had to ask Spielberg to, like, postpone the filming of West Side Story so she could finish her High School Musical production of Shrek.
That's, and he said, so yes. Cute.
And you're 17 years old and you're asking Steven Spielberg because you're one out of 30,000. That's aura.
That's,
and I think she's done a really good job of being able to use her. I mean, she's, like, one of the few Gen Z, like, A-listers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's been able to use her platform for a lot of good things, and she hasn't, like, 10 toes down, she hasn't backed down, and I think that's really admirable.
Yeah, she'd definitely be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Who would you have?
Ooh. I'm gonna say Jack Black.
Oh, okay. That's, you just saw the Minecraft movie, huh?
I did, but, like, it's less about him being in the Minecraft movie and more about the fact that he's still in movies. Like,
right.
Because the man was the voice of childhood. Like, Kung Fu Panda 1 through 3.
That's true.
We don't talk about the fourth one, but Kung Fu Panda 1 through 3.
Speaking of Kung Fu Panda, there's a Poe statue at Kelsey Fullerton.
See, and that's another thing. I would love to see him pose with the statue.
Wait.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
You think they can move
that's
it?
That's a good point.
No, I think he would love Kelsey Fullerton so much because we're such a warm and welcoming audience that he would want to go directly to the visual arts building
maybe
to find the statue.
Maybe we could do, like, a parade.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Same level as Lakers, maybe.
Wow.
I don't know about all that.
You're right. Bigger, better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who would you have for Beyond the Conversation?
I would have Maybe Leslie Odom Jr. He plays Burr in Hamilton, or, you know, the original cast of Hamilton.
Yeah.
I love that man. I think he's great. I think he's really talented.
Mm-hmm. And Aaron Burr, he played Aaron Burr so well.
So well. And then he played a role in The Exorcist 2 that came out, like, 30 years after the original or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he was really good in that, too. Like, he's just a really good actor and writer. So, hey.
So, and maybe David Diggs can put in a good word.
Yes, yes. Oh, yeah, we already had a Hamilton cast. Okay, I want another one. Like, hey, sorry. And maybe like, throughout the years, we could have all of them.
I think so.
Lin-Manuel next arrestor?
That would be Aura.
That would actually be crazy.
I would love to hear him talk about his work.
Yeah.
But right now, we have to talk about more of our work. So, we'll see you around.
I'd love to hear it. Love to hear it.
See
you. Bye. Bye.
Hey Titans, it's Emily Wilson, the editor-in-chief of the Daily Titan. The Daily Titan is looking for editors for next semester. Sadly, I won't be here to look at those applications, but Jaden Lovelady, incoming editor-in-chief, Sarah Leone, incoming managing editor, and Sergio Gonzalez, incoming digital managing editor, will be recruiting new desk editors and assistants for next semester. If you're interested in writing and editing news, lifestyle, opinion, sports, photo, or multimedia stories, please apply at dailytitan.com and email your application to eic@dailytitan.com. I loved my time at the Daily Titan, so I really recommend joining the editorial team. Thank you for listening.
Heading on over to news, we're going to be talking about this week's Academic Senate and the coverage done by Ingrid Melkor, a staff writer of the Daily Titan. So, for context, 8 students at Cal State Fullerton have had their visas revoked, and over 30 other students across the Cal State campuses have as well. So that's kind of the context going into the coverage of this week's Academic Senate.
Yeah, so obviously this comes at a time when President Trump is rolling out visa revocations across multiple schools. UCs have been targeted. CSUs have obviously been targeted as well. And the resounding kind of narrative or sentiment coming out of this was sort of that, like, this is coming at all of a sudden. Like, one of the quotes from Academic Senator Gavin Ong was saying that, like, if students were to have their visas revoked and get deported, like, they can't do anything according to their laws, the visa laws that they see online, and that they're not getting much communication about their visas being revoked in the first place.
Yeah, a big part of this is, like, the lack of communication at all. Like, the fact that it's even happening out of nowhere, what to do next if it happens to you, how to avoid it happening to you, there's really no, like, there's not adequate communication for something as big and life-altering as this.
Yeah.
And a good point brought up by Gavin Ong as well was that, like, quote, I just want to see where that grace is in making sure that our academics are still working and I still have access to the degree that I'm working very hard to get. And I thought that was a really good point because, like, what happens to the degree that they're trying to get if it's not completed? Like, do those credits transfer? Or, like, that's not the biggest issue here of people's life being uprooted, obviously, but it is a valid point to bring up.
No, definitely, like, because when you're uprooted and taken out of the position that you're in or the circumstance you're used to, it sort of leaves you with a lot of questions about what happens next, not only for you, but what happens next to everything that you're a part of. And one of the, like, again, like, the lack of communication has been something that, like, a lot of people have talked about, including Matthew Jarvis. He is the chair of the Senate and a professor of political science at Fullerton. And he said that institutions are discovering the fact that students are having their visas revoked by just running the numbers themselves. They're not being told. They're not finding out about this through an actual form of communication.
Yeah. Mildred Garcia, the CSU chancellor, she did put out a statement in, like, February, and she said that they're working diligently to assess the impacts to the CSU, but she hasn't said anything since February. So, I mean, yeah, this is just, like, echoing the sentiment of, like, we're seeing this happen in real time. We have to gather this information ourselves in real time. There's no real protocol to go about something so devastating as of this.
Like, it's so unprecedented that, like, the school is still, like, looking for how to react. But one of the most, like, resounding sentiments of this came from Professor Brushke, who said that it's not just an abstraction. Like, there are real people leaving our campus, which, like, really echoes sentiment of, like, these aren't just numbers. These aren't just, like, 8 random students or just 8, like, numbers in the system being pulled. Oh. It's 8 people being uprooted from their lives and being removed from the system that they're a part of and a community that they're a part of.
Yeah. Furthermore than that, these are, like, your classmates. These are your friends. These are people in our community that are actively being attacked.
Yeah. It's still unclear what's going to happen next with this, but the next Academic Senate meeting is scheduled for April 24th, where they might dive into this further. All right, now we're going to dive down the rabbit hole of opinion and talk about the alt-right pipeline in a new story written by Noah Scherson, a 471 staff writer.
That was a clean intro.
Thank you. So yeah, the story mainly touched on the way that online discourse, especially things that play into the alt-right pipeline, are bleeding in from social media into in real life political discourse. Mm-hmm. And the alt-right pipeline, to break it down in the simplest terms, is sort of like the consistent fear-mongering that is pushed through social media content and other forms of media that sort of keep men scared and sort of keep men inspired to keep looking towards these false talking heads that speak on these like political issues.
It's basically fear-mongering, and it's an extremist version of conservative beliefs that, keep people scared and keep young, impressionable minds thinking that this world, it's not them that needs to change, it's the world that needs to change around you. And this biggest group of victims of this are young, impressionable minds of young men, specifically because this narrative is built around men and built around centering, you know, white men specifically, and how, you know, the whole world is against them, and it's the world that needs to change and stuff like that. So this opinion just kind of covers, like, you know, beware before you start talking to these talking heads about political ideologies. Like, be aware of what comes up after that. Like, if you're watching something on YouTube, like a study at UC Davis kind of uncovered that, like, it can start as simple as like, okay, I want to see what the other side is saying. Like, let me watch one political commentator from the right to get their perspective. And the video after that will become more and more centered around this alt-right pipeline into conspiracy theories and extremist beliefs and stuff. And kind of like, you know, warning viewers, like, be careful of what you're, you know, consider what you're consuming.
No, definitely. I'm really glad you touched on the fear-mongering aspect and like the whole us against them thing, because especially like how you said, it's portrayed to make impressions on young white men. Mm-hmm. Like specifically, like they target on things like, oh, DEI, minorities are out here to take jobs, and like all these opportunities that white men are so-called losing out on.
Yeah.
To sort of push this idea of like, we as whites need to sort of come together to fight against these like these outside forces, in a sense.
Yeah. I think it was really interesting that Andrew Hoat, a professor of philosophy at Cal State Fullerton, he said in the interview for this, that they're often designed to make you angry, because we know from psychological research that anger is the most viral emotion. And that was a really interesting point, how like anger and fear, like they feed this whole narrative and pushing this farther down the rabbit hole and stuff like that. And it gives platform to people like Charlie Kirk, who he came here to spread this like ideology that's just so rooted in like us against them, and this whole concept of like the Matrix is against me, and like,
yeah, like, you know. I mean, at one of his appearances at USC, he said that like white privilege doesn't exist and things like that.
It's scary because specifically with the last election, like it was notably controversial for a myriad of reasons, but it's scary because stuff like this continues to grow. And you know, it's not just the alt-right pipeline, even though that's like the biggest example of this dangerous like genuine pipeline and like rabbit hole trap that, you know, political commentators set, but like it's scary how it bleeds into conversation about politics. Like, it takes away the genuine integrity of having political opinions, because if they're not extremist, what value do they have?
Yeah.
All right, guys, to bring out our closer from the bullpen, our official sports correspondent and sports editor, Nick Wire, is here to talk about
softball.
Yep.
So what's going on? How are we doing?
So softball had another great series. They swept Cal State Northridge, and this is significant. Northridge was above them in the standings, Big West standings, and softball is officially first in the Big West as of today.
Let's go.
Today.
Wow.
Let's go. Tusks are up.
Yeah.
How
does the rest of the conference look after Fullerton now?
It's still tight. So Fullerton is tied at the top. So there's still a lot. There's still a lot of games to be played. Right. So, but the person that really stood out this weekend was Ava Arce, their first baseman. She went 4 for 9. She had 2 home runs, 6 RBIs, and she now has 48 RBIs on the season.
Wow.
And that's tied for 6th all time for RBIs by a Titan.
Wow.
Oh,
climbing up the
leaderboards. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's pretty great.
Is she like a 4th year, 2nd year?
Believe she is junior.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So she's got time to rack up more numbers.
Yeah,
too.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It is cool.
So with the rest of the conference being tight and Fullerton being tied at number one, what does it look like with their next game coming up? You think we're going to take that number one spot officially?
So they got another 3-game series against UC Davis this upcoming weekend. I'm feeling confident, especially them playing against Cal State Northridge, and also playing and sweeping Long Beach State. Those are big series, and they played really well. So, outside of RC, the other thing too, the big thing about any baseball or softball sport is pitching, and pitching for them has been really, really good. Trisha McCleskey had a really good game. She pitched 7 shutout innings and only allowed 3 hits and a walk. And that was her collegiate career high. She had 7 strikeouts.
Congrats to her.
Yeah.
It's real awesome. How is UC Davis looking as a team?
They're decent. Yeah. So
looking like a good matchup?
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Do you have a question for us this week, Nick? We always have a question for you. If you were to ask us a question about sports, like, what would it be?
What is the worst sport to watch?
To watch? Live or watch on TV?
On TV.
On TV? I'm going to throw a controversial opinion out there. I'm going to say it's baseball. I think out of any live sporting event you can attend in person, baseball is the most fun. I think they have the funnest environment.
Interesting.
But I think watching it on TV is like, you get none of the perks of being at the baseball game except for watching the game. And it's like, you got to set aside a cool 3 hours on most weekends if you want to watch that whole game.
And there's such large like time gaps between the interesting parts.
Exactly. Like, and you don't even get the hot dog. You don't even get the nachos either. So,
are you saying the same thing? Baseball's your choice?
I was going to say that. But then when I was thinking about it more, golf? No, I'm sorry. I just can't sit there and watch that.
Masters just finished today.
Oh.
Mm. Yeah.
Hey, that's not a slight against golf. I just, as someone whose dad put it on like almost every night, I don't think I can watch another game of golf on my TV in my lifetime.
Fair.
Yeah.
Nice.
I would also argue tennis, but not because the game is boring itself. I just feel like the crowd isn't into it. Mm-hmm. And they're on the camera so much that it's like, yeah. I'm just like, the crowd's not reacting, so I'm not reacting.
I like it because it reminds me of like the Wii Sports tennis.
Yeah, I do love
and
that.
And that was like a cornerstone of my childhood. Cornerstone, by the way. Cornerstone.
You got it.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Nick, what about you? What's your least favorite sporting event to watch on TV?
I'm thinking specific Olympic events.
Mm.
Ooh.
Race walking, maybe?
Oh, that's gotta be pretty.
What? Y'all can't get into that?
No. And I think Summer Olympics, for example, something like rowing, it's just not my thing.
Mm, that's understandable.
It's probably a very exciting sport to watch. It's just not my thing. So yeah,
that's very valid.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favorite thing to watch, though?
I love watching basketball, especially March Madness, but this year was a down year, so.
Yeah.
I think it was. Yeah. But yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing, Nick.
Yeah.
See you next
week.
Glad
to be here. Okay. See you guys.
See you around.
All right, guys, you can go listen to another podcast, but it just can't be this one because this episode is over. Be sure to pick up a copy of The Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned and many more. Thank you all for listening, and week after week, guys, if you like us, we love you.
You know, I shouldn't have to tell you what time it is, but you know I will anyways. It's time for us to give a couple thanks around here before we head out. So first of all, we got to throw a special thank you to our executive producers, Isaiah Malari and Emily Wilson. Another big old thank you is going over to our producer, Luis Vizcaino. We also got to give a couple thank yous to our assistant producers, Raniel Santos and Michelle King. And another big old thank you is going over to Bijan Schusterisade for providing the music in this episode. And the biggest thank you of all goes out to all of you listeners. Thank you again for tuning into this week's episode and all the other ones. We hope to see you next week, and make sure you pick up a copy of that paper. We'll see you soon, Titans.